Welcome to the So-and-So series, readings by early career poets. Arnie Buchanan is the author of What Animal, published in October 2003 as the winner of the University of Georgia Press Contemporary Poetry Series competition. Her poems currently appear or are forthcoming in Conduit, Seneca Review, Dragonfire, Forklift Ohio, and elsewhere, including the anthologies The Best American Poetry 2004 and Legitimate Dangers, American Poets of the New Century. She holds a BA in English and Music from the University of Virginia, an MFA in Poetry from the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and a master's degree in piano performance from the New England Conservatory of Music. As a concert pianist, she has released 3 solo piano CDs. How many do we have back there?
Two.
Of which are on sale tonight. And actively performs music across the U.S. She's on the piano faculty at the New School of Music in Cambridge, maintains a private teaching studio, and serves as an online poetry mentor for the Anna Akhmatova Foundation. Arnie Buchanan.
So thank you all for coming, and thank you, Chris, for having us on the... I'm going to take a picture. I'm not into that.
That's fine.
Yeah. So I thought I'd do something which I've never done, even by myself, really. So I'm going to read this part of this long poem that I wrote. The title is called Or Portals to Another World, and that actually is taken from a poem in my book, What Animal, and the line is thought by a guinea pig in the poem. The guinea pig has nothing really to do with this poem I'm going to read. I'm just going to read part of it. What it is like, it's a long 9-page kind of ordeal, and it has poems. Or like the portals to another world, so you kind of have to imagine that you can, like, you're in a hallway or something and you can just open doors and enter whatever landscape you come into, and those are the portals. But what I have is, like, the landscapes that I've entered into are in different stages of being extricated from one another, so, like, I'll have 2 or 3 landscapes running simultaneously or more, but then when you, they're entwined, so... they interact with one another, but then they're like on their way to being individual poems. So I'm gonna have to like start and stop a lot and read you the individual poems and then read how they're on their way of being taken apart. But the first stanza is just regularly explaining kind of what portals to another world is. So, or portals to another world. Like the eyes of animals, each portal led outward to a new kind of garden, one a honeycomb of burgeoning chambers, sealed from inventory, a wax melted over the speaking rims of hexagons. In another, an untouched goblet, one of only sand, a marble tablet in its center listing the names of the 50 winds, the fleeting chisels of that land. Then the grand chamber of a cave buttressed up with limestone columns, a massive cascade of stalactites, like a pipe organ sounding notes by timeless drip, an organ whose petals pooled with water, one just dark, and from within a foghorn blare that echoed over vastness. And then it starts with the entwined one. So, as I said, I've never really done this, but I'm gonna read the, I'll read them separately, like what they would be if they were autonomous poems, but then I'll read them. In this particular one, it's like, I don't know if you can see it. They're right in the middle, and it's one line to one. It's like a 1-to-1 ratio. The one line goes to the line of the other poem, and all right. Here's the. You'll have to just trust me. Okay. So here's one landscape, and if I just read vertically, this is how it would read. The faces, the flesh of faces, sheared from bodies. A face chews another face, a limp face in pleats from its mouth. A face hangs like a rag from a pointed stick driven hard into the ground, a stake to measure property, and over the face of the sun two faces hang, their scalloped edges fluttering in the breeze. Some faces have so many holes from the chewing, the puncturing, from dragging themselves by teeth over the beach of broken shells, a beach whose ocean long ago receded, that acrobatic lines of flies angle through, threading faces together in their flight paths. The buzzing of the flies disturbs the ones with ears, ears heavy and fleshy, tugging down the corners of the eyes, tugging the forehead and the cheeks to fold great channels where the tears can flow, the irrigation of that desiccated earth. On a step, faces balance. The cruel faces slide wet from birthing sacks and drenched, set off away designing. One face grinds its teeth in its sleep, if you could call its constant trembling, its refusal to open its eyes, sleep. This is the face that tries to bury itself, waiting for the rain to come, that the parched dust might forge to mud where it can lay itself down. And then the other one that's running alongside, and these are going to be interfering with one another. And the pilots bomb from incredible height above the city, incinerating all its boulevards and buildings, landscaping, industrial matrices, and no one runs, no animal howls at piles of brick, not a thing escapes, attempts. The pilots land in embers to crawl exhausted into neat provided beds. 12 hours, barks the captain, and as they sleep, a host of unknown creatures surfaces to build again a different city in the first one's place. A general surveys the finished land, plants coordinates for threats, and whispers missions in a handheld player. And waking into new demand, each pilot plunges direct into adrenaline, and from his cramped cockpit, from his helmet humid with his quickened breath, flies high enough above that the target grows surreal and still. And there he locks the enemy as numbers in the crosshairs and feels again his heart deafening inside his chest, his lungs now breathless with the deed, his senses sharpened to a superhuman sharp, much sharper than in life, than in some ordinary life. And here's the interference, so you'll probably recognize some of the source lines. And the pilots bomb the faces, the flesh of faces, from incredible height above, sheared from bodies, a face, the city, incinerating all, choose another face, a limp face, its boulevards and buildings in pleats from its mouth. Landscaping, industrial, a face, hangs like a rag, matrices, and no one runs from a pointed stick driven hard. No animal howls into the ground, a stake to measure, piles of brick property. And over the face of the sun, not a thing escapes. Two faces hang, their scalloped attempts. The pilots land, edges fluttering in the breeze, in embers to crawl. Some faces have so many exhausted into neat provided holes from the chewing, the beds. 12 hours puncturing from dragging, barks a captain. And as they themselves by teeth sleep, a host of unknown over the beach of broken creatures, surfaces to build again shells, a beach whose ocean, a different city, in the first long ago receded, that acrobatic one's place. A general surveys the lines of flies angle through, finished land, plants, coordinates, threading faces together for threats and whispers in their flight paths. The buzzing missions in a handheld player of the flies disturbs the one with ears, and waking into new demand, ears heavy and fleshy, tugging down each pilot, plunges direct the corner of the eyes, tugging into adrenaline and from the forehead and the cheeks to fold his cramped cockpit, great channels for the tears from his helmet humid can flow, the irrigation of that desiccated with his quickened breath, earth. On a step, faces balance, flies high enough above, the cruel faces slide wet, that the target grows surreal from birthing sacks, and drenched and still, And there he locks, set off away, designing one face, the enemy as numbers, grinds its teeth in its sleep in the crosshairs, and feels again, if you could call its constant trembling, his heart, deafening inside its refusal to open its eyes, sleep. His chest, his lungs now breathless, this is the face that tries to bury with the deed, his senses sharpened itself, waiting for the rain to come to a superhuman sharp, much sharper than the parched dust might, than in life, than in some forge to mud where it, ordinary life, can lay itself down. I just took a picture of the object, and it has writing on it, so it looks like, or John actually took the picture of it with his work camera. So we have different views of the object, so it's like this kind of thing. It's just a very common folded, it's an origami crane, yeah. And there's three of these dropped objects that are found in the poem. You kind of run into them, and the only way to find out what they say is to recreate the object itself. Like, you would have to make it. And then you would have to go by the different views of it and inscribe the letters onto the object. And then you'd have to open it. And that's the only way to decode the actual writing, because once you open it, then it's clear the order that the letters are supposed to go. But once it's, I don't give any instructions, so it's like only meant for anybody who figures that out. So yeah, when you open it, and then it looks kind of like junky or whatever, but it has all the line breaks written in, so it helps to have a straight edge, and then you can see what it says. But they're just these asides, as if you overheard some commentary on whatever is surrounding it. So this particular one, the crane says, "No, don't let them run away. They won't survive on their own, for the world is cruel and objective, unswayed by innocence, by sweet noises and softness. The thing with teeth comes, is hungry, and tears to shreds the soft folded ears, the vulnerable belly." Okay, now this one, this is still the same poem, and this is like another simultaneous thing. There's three poems now running at the same time. So like, the first two were like this close together, and this one, they start pulling apart. You know when you do that thing and you look at the very tips of your fingers, and like a little sausage kind of forms in the middle of the air. You remember when you have to do that in high school? Anyway, that's what this poem is like on the page. Like, the outside poems have pulled apart enough that like there's this middle residue that started to form in it. And so you could either read vertically down either of the outside columns, or you could read vertically down the center, and that each one of those makes three distinct poems, but then I think I'm just going to read them all together, since this takes a long time. The one on the poem on the left is like a minefield kind of scene, with the miserables limping with their chosen others through the minefield. And then the one on the far right is related. It's this animal who's I think I should read the one on the right. It's an animal who's like under this like net of static, and you can't see him. You just know he was there. His tracks are there. And then in the middle is this like weird ritual dance of all the like forest animals when it's dawn. So that's what happened in the middle. I don't know, but I'll just read the animal one so that you can at least hear one of the separate ones, and then I'm going to read the whole page. Okay, so this is the far one on the right. Only dirt sky, the deafening static, and an animal's tracks gone out of sight beneath the lines of noise. The dusty paw prints disappear. The crackling frays and convulses ramifies like a grid of electric wires low over the ground to form a hovering atmospheric wrap net of perpetual voltage, synaptic code, a buffer for the sky. Should a lost thing look for vantage? Should a grounded thing try reaching higher than itself? The animal was deep within, unseen, unheard, beneath the riddled air. Not a bleat or whimper came from within the buzzing visionary heart. Okay, so here's all three of them interfering with another, with one another. Charred, broken stalks, only dirt, sky, the deafening, the blown out holes, static, and an animal's tracks, and the miserables gone out of sight. Dawn comes near continuous for the day, much shorter than the world's day, as they limp with their chosen others beneath the lines of noise. Others, some, the dusty paw prints, lured sorrowful, some disappear. The crackling reenact their dance, their ritual of appearance. The light in beacon shines, outlines a puzzler hopeful, maimed. Frays and convulses, ramifies, silent for appear, like a grid of electric wires, a fashioned tragedy low over the ground. To circle on the barren dirt, into whose perimeter the grass blades bend themselves, to share, for each can form a hovering Titan tourniquets, gauze, atmospheric wrap, net of inflicted wounds, perpetual voltage, and bow, release their dewdrops and raise to height, a hoisting by thinnest glimmer threads left by a diligent spider. For competence can make synaptic code a buffer for the sky, a splint from a former's bone, should a lost thing look and set the brokenness awry for vantage. Should the violets unfold their stems to reach while tenor crocuses jut with thicker stalks, the worms appearing in curve specific to the sick, a grounded thing, the sickened head try reaching higher than to cradle for competence itself. The animal was at the brink of passageways, gnats in pizzicato clouds, and the beetles metallically arranged to flare the angels down. Can balance stone deep within, unseen on stone, a cairn to mark the unheard beneath the riddled spot, an old unlucky fell exploded, air, not a bleat, the angels far above and harnessed to construction cranes descend by rope and pulley, inside a stone a gem or whimper came, a secret greed. Inside a stone, from within the buzzing, an old volcanic ash, visionary heart. I think I'm going to skip this frog, so you'll have to make your own frog. And there's also a water bomb later, but I didn't bring that one. I'm just going to read something else and then stop reading. So I'm going to read two letters I wrote to this, or two letters written to, I wrote it, but the loneliest animal is the name of the recipient for these letters. And there's a bunch of letters to the lonely animal. Dear lonely animal, I miss you. The other animals are looking at porn again. I will never dress or disrobe in front of the other animals ever again. Skin is different than that. Bodies are different. They're filled with eternity, they exude rapture and light. Lonely animal, the other animals are wearing black masks and storming the press room, toting heavy weaponry and strapped with belts of ammunition. The other animals sport flouncy hair extensions. They are taking each other on cruises with that kind of caviar I can never remember how to call. The other animals are text messaging one another, I am writing to you, lonely animal. I will never be a part of this world. I should have built a long ago tower and lived there. I've made mistakes thinking I found another animal with whom I belonged. But now where should I live? Should it be the old factory filled with broken glass? I could manufacture tears for the world and make $1 million. Jeweled silver tears, crystal tears, adhesive tears to gem to the face. Beautiful long tears, like liquid metal cooled. So slender, exquisite. Animal, there is a puddle I love to step in. Splash! The other animals talk so important and stuff. I make the cat and the sheep and the pig sounds. I'm sad and I make the sounds like the snail and sometimes the clam. At least the snail carries his home on his back. If you put a snail down in a huge wild meadow filled with thistle and lace and clover, insects, snakes, and mice, what are the chances that that snail will find another snail during his lifetime in all that terrain? Even if two snails meet, what would they do? I saw a documentary where the two snails met and just mated right away. They're all the same, everybody. I'll read one more animal letter and that'll be it. Dear lonely animal, I'm writing to you from the loneliest, most secluded island in the world. I mean, the farthest away place from anything else. There are so many fruits here growing on trees or on vines that wrap and wrap. Fruits like I've never seen, except the bananas. All night the abandoned dogs howled. I wonder if one dog gives the first howl and if they take turns who's first, like carrying the flag in school. Carrying the flag way out in front, and the others following along behind in two long lines, pairs holding hands. Also, the roosters here crow from 4 a.m. onward. They're still crowing right now, and it's almost noon here on the island. Noon stares back, no matter where you are. Today, I'm going to hike to the extinct volcano and balance on the rim of the crater. Yesterday, a gust almost blew me inside. I heard that the black widows live inside the volcano far down below in the high grasses that you can't see from the rim. Well, I was going to tell you that this morning the bells rang and I followed them and there at the source of the bells, there I found so many animals all gathered together in a room with carved wooden statues and wooden benches and low wooden slats for kneeling. And the animals were there singing together. All their voices singing, with big, strong voices rising from even the filthiest animals. I mean, I've seen animals come together and sing before, except in high, fancy vaults where bits of colored glass are pieced together into stories. Some days I want to sing with them. I wish more animals sang together all the time. But then I can't sing sometimes because I think of the news that happens when the animals stop singing. And then I think of all the medications and their side effects that are advertised between the pieces of news. And then I think of all the money the drug companies spent to videotape their photogenic, well-groomed animals, and all the money they spent to buy prime time spot. And I think, what money buys the news? And what news creates the drugs? And what drugs control the animals? And I get so choked. I can't sing anymore, lonely animal. I can't sing with the other animals. Because it's hard to know what an animal will do when it stops singing. It's complicated, you know. It's just complicated. Thanks.